I'm Josh Chamet. I'm one of the media officers at the National Science Foundation, and one of my responsibilities is to share with the public results from multi-messenger astronomy, as well as results from fields of study where different traditional fields of research converge to announce findings that are new to science, that take science in new directions.
So this is kind of like a multidisciplinary field, and you got your degree in geoscience, but you just attended this conference, which was about multi-messenger astronomy. And during your degree, you actually studied meteorite mineralogy. So I was just wondering if you've always had an interest in astronomy.
I've had an interest in science since the beginning. My dad was a chemist by training. My mom was a dietitian by training. I focused on geology as an undergrad along with music, and then music and geology again in grad school. And I did receive a master's studying meteorites and the mineralogy of meteorites and how that reflects on what's going on inside of asteroids. And while I was also at graduate school at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, studying that, one of my advisors, Larry Taylor, got me into what was called the NASA Academy, and that really moved me and pivoted me towards space more than I had been before. So I had been interested in space and space science in various ways, but I hadn't really been looking to that field as a career until I started studying the asteroids and meteorites with my advisor, Hat McSween, and with Larry Taylor, and with Ted Lobotka, and with Dan Britt, and all these others at UT Knoxville. And then through Larry getting me into the NASA Academy, it really opened up my mind to communicating some of these space science results and learning more about that particular field and how that field is presented in the press. I think that astronomy and space science really has its own niche in media and in outreach. And I think the public really engages in it in a way that they may not engage in other areas of science and other areas of just journalism in general. So my experience with science communication goes back to college and graduate school and being selected to participate in what's called the NASA Academy. And the NASA Academy is a summer program where graduate students and undergraduate students get firsthand training with a mentor in science or engineering at a NASA facility. I was brought in uniquely as a science communicator, and I'm not sure if they've done it since, but it was a powerful experience for me, and I think it shed a lot of light on communications for the other participants who were in the program with me that summer. So I was brought in to directly engage the public through writing articles for space.com. At the time, this is about, I think this was 2000, space.com just launched as basically a startup media organization. They had a headquarters in the NASA headquarters building. It was a tiny little office. In fact, that may not even have been the headquarters, I don't know, but it was a small office in the NASA headquarters building. And I was given a desk and assignments to go out and write about things in space and astronomy. And at the time, there were a lot of publications doing science reporting with excellent science journalists, many of whom had science backgrounds. And space.com was carving out an audience that not only had great science journalism behind it that would be providing content for the audience, but it also had a fan base that was really motivated by its subject matter, because people who are engaged in space and astronomy tend to be a very active community, very engaged in following the latest news and trends and discoveries. And they tend to be very active in talking about the science, even outside of day-to-day general publications, which would be picking up the major news stories. So you might have space frequently picked up in the popular press, but the space community takes that even a step further and continues the conversations in between those articles to really keep momentum going on just discoveries and activity in space science. So I got a few articles published with them and learned quite a bit about that media landscape. And it was a media landscape that shifted about 7 or 8 years later during the economic collapse, when a lot of news outlets shrank or eliminated their science staff. On the other hand, you had outlets like space.com and nationalgeographic.com and discovery.com that had science reporting staff and represented a new platform for science communication that wasn't there 15 years earlier. So there was this transition from science communication going out through science reporters that worked for the traditional media publications, that started to shift more towards science journalism being picked up by science-specific publications that then had their own science-specific audiences. And so you started seeing even more engagement from individuals and the public who would follow particular science sites to dig deeper into topics like astronomy, what NASA's engaged with the astronaut program and other areas of space science and astronomy and so on. So when I began working for NSF in 2001, I had that background, but I was then became much more focused on the broad spectrum of science that NSF covers. So far beyond just space, it's everything from biology to archaeology to climate to you name it. It's really everything. But I did continue to cover different aspects of space science that would come up from time to time. When I left NSF in 2013, I revisited space.com and livescience.com and ended up taking a position with them, developing what was called Expert Voices, which was a platform to bring in outside experts, not their journalists, but outside experts, to write features and op-eds that added more context to some of these topics. So it could be anything from the nature of consciousness to understanding black holes to we even had a feature from the NASA administrator. We had a feature from the CEO of Unilever, basically digging deeply into topics that would engage audiences and drive conversation. At the end of 2017, I pivoted back towards NSF and took a position here that actually started in January of 2018 and soon after was engaged in space again through just the content that was emerging at the agency. And because I had expertise, I was able to present that as news coverage. So we talked about, for example, research done using a radio telescope to see when the first stars in the universe turned on. We did a lot of work to promote research coming out of our Ice Cube neutrino detector and how it was able to detect a neutrino that other telescopes were then able to follow up on and pinpoint the source, which was a true multi-messenger discovery, one of the first really covered in science. And then we had the Event Horizon Telescope announcement in April of this year, which ended up being just obviously one of the biggest stories of science in how it was picked up. And that was not technically multi-messenger because it was all a particular wavelength of radio astronomy, but it involved multiple institutions and multiple facilities and multiple stakeholders that all had to convey a message together and collaborate in their outreach in order for that story to be more than just about a picture of a fuzzy blob. And so some of the best practices that emerged from that are ones that directly translate to how to communicate about multi-messenger astronomy.
Well, part of the reason that the GEMMA summit was held was as a communications summit. So did you think that for multi-messenger astronomy, which is this up-and-coming field of detections through electromagnetic waves, gravitational waves, and particles, this multi-messenger astronomy has been chosen as part of one of NSF's big 10 ideas as a subfield of windows into the universe, which is their astronomy concentration. So how does this play into the big picture of what NSF's trying to do with their Big Ten ideas, as well as did you think that the summit that we had at SDSCI back in November was a needed one, a productive one?
Multi-messenger astronomy has long been a priority of NSF, and it stems from the recognition of what can be learned about astronomical phenomena by having information that spans these different messengers, and knowing that NSF's 40-year investment in LIGO was eventually going to produce gravitational wave information, we knew that would help transform how multi-messenger astronomy might take place. We knew that through our investments in neutrino research, that eventually that would pair with optical telescopes and even gravitational waves, and you get all three to really help create a uniform and comprehensive deep dive into understanding whatever that phenomenon is that's being detected. So NSF has had multi-messenger in mind for quite some time. And in fact, one of the other major multi-messenger breakthroughs happened at the end of 2017 with the LIGO gravitational wave, NSF's LIGO gravitational wave detectors picking up on two neutron stars colliding, and then some 70 plus telescopes turning their attention to that spot in the sky and gathering all sorts of additional information and being able to complete this broad picture and understanding and confirming some of the theory about what's happening when neutron stars collide, including learning, you know, for sure and confirming that things like gold are created in these types of cataclysmic activities. So it's always been something we've been looking towards, and 2017 and 2018, we started really seeing this happening. And so it really is opening up a new era for astronomy. Multi-messenger is opening up a new era for astronomy because it's allowing facilities around the world that have different capabilities across different types of science to be able to work together to analyze a massive activity and phenomenon somewhere in space. So when you think about the comprehensive knowledge that's gained from a multi-messenger detection and how all of those different pieces for the first time come together to transform scientists' understanding of what they're seeing, it's completely transformative for science. So from NSF's vantage, it was recognized again rather early on that this involves expertise across fields. So you're not talking about just astronomers, you're not talking about just physicists, you're not talking about just computer scientists, you're not talking about just mathematicians. You're talking about individuals from all of these different fields and others coming together and somehow sharing a language and sharing perspective and sharing intuition to develop new science. And from that new science, gather completely new insights, transformative insights into the universe. In 2016, NSF leadership convened to look at some of the biggest challenges facing science. And for many of them, the answer is a convergence of traditional fields into new approaches that drive science forward in completely new ways. So, for example, in quantum science and engineering, you have quantum physicists, you have computer scientists, you have engineers. They all speak their own language. They all have their different intuitions about their different fields. But for quantum to really break out, for computing, for security, for science, you really need individuals who can have an intuition and experience that crosses and fuses those traditional fields. So the big idea that emerged from NSF is Quantum Leap. So Quantum Leap brings together experts from various traditional fields to address quantum in a new way and to develop a quantum intuition and quantum in a language that crosses across those traditional fields to move the science forward. So with multi-messenger astronomy as a big idea under Windows on the Universe, the goal is to bring together experts across different fields who speak different scientific languages, who have different intuitions, for them to work together to create a common perspective moving forward that allows transformative discoveries that address some of the biggest questions in astronomy and space and in physics. So you have, instead of somebody focused on their contributions being from their prior experience and their particular niche, you have people working together towards a single goal across a shared language and with a shared goal in mind to generate discoveries that really change how we understand how the universe works. So when the media landscape shifted around 2007 and 2008, it created an environment where there were so many different sources of information that audiences could find content and dive deep and not necessarily see the same thing that somebody next to them is seeing. And so from a communications perspective, if you're reporting on a new discovery in astronomy or a new way of looking at black holes or any of these different things, you are challenged by this landscape, this communications landscape that is really fractured and divided into multiple niches. So with multi-messenger astronomy, because you're fusing all of these different fields of science, because you're fusing all of these different expert voices, and you're fusing all of these nations, and you're fusing all of these stakeholders into the same story, you have an opportunity, if you collaborate, to break through the fractured media landscape and really show up on the radar in everybody's newsfeed. And when you break through and you can engage people in different audiences on the same topic, you really can drive interesting conversations, and you can drive excitement, and you can drive a new way of looking at the universe. The GEMMA Summit was an opportunity for communications experts across astronomy and astrophysics and across a variety of institutions to really think about the challenges facing how we communicate the findings of multi-messenger astronomy and astrophysics and the opportunities for finding solutions. And those experts considered the challenges that they'd been facing just with general communications, the successes they'd had with general communications, but also the new challenges that are emerging as multi-messenger astronomy emerges as a major initiative for science. And some of those challenges involve the breadth of the scientific discoveries. It involves the different scientific languages from the different fields represented, whether it's physicists, computer scientists, engineers, astronomers, all of those different fields. How are they going to speak with one voice to communicate a research result? There's also challenges of speaking across national languages and time zones. And, you know, when you have facilities and experts that are truly global and scattered around the world, how do you set up meetings to have conversations and discuss outreach when it's midnight in one place and the middle of the afternoon in another? All of these challenges are emerging now, and we're trying to figure out, can we get ahead of those challenges and find solutions now so that we can have coherent, clear, exciting messages about the science results when they happen? How do we present these research results in ways that the public will understand and enjoy and appreciate? How do we present scientific findings to convey the transformative nature of those findings, how they're really changing scientists' perspectives about how the universe works, when we are faced with all of these logistical and other challenges and cultural challenges to communicating these multi-messenger activities? So the GEMMA Summit made tremendous progress in both establishing the challenges that communicators face and establishing some possible solutions to help multi-messenger astronomy and astrophysics communication moving forward. And the results were encouraging because the summit participants really had a lot of shared experiences and a lot of agreement on both the challenges and the solutions. The participants started to discuss best practices for communicating these broad scale, multinational, multi-institutional activities in astronomy and astrophysics. So I think there'll be a real impact from that content. I think those perspectives will help a lot of communications professionals think through how to strategically share complex topics for broad audiences in ways that really get those themes to resonate, in ways that drive conversation, and in ways that really inspire people. So I think that the summit itself, as an opportunity to not only air grievances and devise solutions, had value, but it also has value in I think it'll have a legacy of new mechanisms for communicating science, and new mechanisms for communicating science in a media landscape that is very diverse and very fractured, and with audiences that have a lot of other things that they could be looking at besides a science story about a multi-messenger astronomy breakthrough. I think that this guidance will help communicators break through those challenges to convey some really complex topics and get people excited about and talking about some of these research breakthroughs. So through the GEMMA Summit, we're not only able to find ways to communicate something complex and challenging to share when you're dealing with multiple voices trying to convey the same story, we're also able to try to think about stories that can elevate conversation and inspire people across a completely fractured media landscape. And this happened with the Event Horizon Telescope Outreach, which was not multi-messenger, but had some of the features of multi-messenger in that you had multiple nations involved, you had collaboration across a wide range of institutions and stakeholders, you had collaboration across a wide range of fields of expertise, you had a lot of interested individuals trying to convey this story about how exciting this result was. And because of it, on the day that that announcement was made, the world stopped and they looked at that picture and they thought about what it meant and they thought about what it was like at that environment of a black hole. They thought about what it meant to look at a place in space where all of our understanding of physics and astronomy and everything breaks down, and think even philosophically about what all of that means. That type of moment we will see again, because multi-messenger astronomy is going to bring together those sorts of communicators and those sorts of scientific perspectives in those sorts of ways again. And I think that's exciting. I think it's exciting to think about how conversations are going to emerge from the stories we're going to tell from multi-messenger discoveries that will change people's perspective, not only about science, but how they view the universe.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me on the podcast. And I'm really glad I got to meet you and listen to all your insightful comments, both at the summit and on the podcast here. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.